Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, December 23rd, 2016. The United Nations Security Council votes on an arms embargo and targeted sanctions on South Sudan.
An arms embargo seeks to further weaken the government and strengthen the numerous militia and armed groups due to the numbers of historical reasons, which include the long civil war that left arms in the hands of civilians.
South Sudan's government spokesman says the country does not need an arms embargo.
It is a ploy to diminish the political responsibility of the government of South Sudan and, you know, in protecting the Republic of South Sudan territorial integrity.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. In New York today, the United Nations Security Council failed to secure the 9 votes it needed to pass a resolution that would expand targeted sanctions and an arms embargo on South Sudan. 7 of the 15-member Security Council voted in favor, while 8, including Russia, China, Japan, Egypt, and Senegal, abstained from voting. United States Ambassador to the UN, Samantha Power, says failing to pass the resolution sends the wrong message to perpetrators of the 3-year-long conflict.
Instead, what the abstainers have rallied behind is treading water. And it does, in fact, constitute the definition of insanity, which is to do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result.
South Sudan representative to the UN, Ambassador Joseph Mom-Malok, says the resolution would have only weakened his government.
We have always argued that an arms embargo seeks to further weaken the government and strengthen the numerous militia and armed groups due to the numbers of historical reasons, which include the long civil war that left arms in the hands of civilians, porous borders that make it difficult to control the illegal inflow of arms, of small arms and light weapons.
Power argues the resolution would have significantly reduced arms sales by UN member states to the South Sudan government, which she says chooses to buy arms and weapons instead of feeding its people.
This resolution would not have been a panacea. We are not naive. It would not have solved the underlying political crisis at the heart of what has divided South Sudan. But the arms embargo would have had some significant effects. It would have made it impossible for the government of South Sudan to continue to use the precious resources they have to buy heavy weapons armaments.
Power urged the council to include an expansion of the sanctions regime that would have added Army Chief Paul Malong, Information Minister Michael McQuay, and former First Vice President Riek Machar on the UN list of travel bans and asset freezes.
These are 3 leaders with lengthy resumes for fueling violence. They have stoked ethnic conflict, unleashed violence against civilians, and, especially in the case of Mr. Malong and Mr. McQuay, attempted to portray UNMISS as a party to the conflict. You've all seen the rhetoric. Many of you have soldiers who are on the ground in South Sudan. Those soldiers are more vulnerable because of the threats and the caricatures that these individuals have put out about UNMISS, saying that UNMISS is just a tool of the opposition. That is a vulnerability for all of our people who are present on the ground, whether aid workers, diplomats, private citizens, or peacekeepers.
The South Sudan government is glad the United Nations Security Council vote failed. Presidential spokesman Atenuek Aten says he's happy that countries like China and Russia refused to vote for imposing targeted sanctions and an arms embargo on South Sudan.
Voting for an arms embargo against South Sudan is unnecessary completely, because it is a ploy to diminish the political responsibility of the government of South Sudan and, you know, in protecting the Republic of South Sudan territorial integrity. And those arms groups, you know, from continue to fight.
Aten says whatever has happened in the past, South Sudan remains a strong country and is capable of restoring peace on its own.
The message I wanted to give to those countries that have stood by South Sudan is that please continue to help South Sudan and continue to stand with South Sudan. South Sudan is a country that has the potential, is a country that can emerge stronger and stronger if it is given chance to do so. Is a country that, you know, has what it takes to be a peaceful country because we observe democracy.
He says the relationship between South Sudan and those who voted against the country will remain intact because South Sudan needs friends to achieve everlasting peace.
The people of international community, you know, without regards to whether they have voted for us or they have voted against us. So this is what I want to tell people of South Sudan. They must remain vigilant and make sure that they don't target all the foreigners, including those who are actually trying to fast sanction against us.
Last month, government leaders warned that an arms embargo and sanctions against individuals would weaken the government and put the country at risk of being attacked by enemies. As people around the world prepare to celebrate Christmas on Sunday, South Sudanese refugees in Uganda say they have nothing to celebrate. They say this year's Christmas will pass like any other ordinary day because they do not have the means to afford a celebration. Magume Davis Wakarinj visited some of the refugees in northern Uganda and has this report.
The 38-year-old single mother, Mary Ajiku, grinds sorghum on a grindstone in Imaji refugee settlement as her 2-year-old plays with other children in the camp. Ajiku will use the sorghum flour to prepare porridge for dinner for her son and herself. Speaking her native Madi language, Ajiku says her 4 other children were adopted by relatives because she was unable to provide for them. She says she left Nimule after armed men attacked and killed people in her village earlier this year.
I don't have money to enjoy this Christmas. Back then, I would buy some items from town and sell them for a profit in the village. And I would use this money to purchase enough for Christmas, but here it's not possible.
Ajiku is among more than 1 million South Sudanese seeking refuge in neighboring countries, mainly Uganda, Kenya, Ethiopia and Sudan since the civil war broke out in late 2013. Ajiku's neighbor, 20-year-old Joyce Kojo, fled Juba in July when a surge in fighting occurred. Her father was arrested by a known man in uniform. Kojo says before fighting flared up in Juba, her family of 10, including her 7 siblings, used to celebrate every Christmas season.
We call our friends, we celebrate together. For us, yeah, in our home, we just buy bull, we just slaughter people, we celebrate sodas, everything, but here, getting money even is a problem.
Kojo says they used to sing and dance to both traditional and Western music on past Christmas days. 43-year-old Jacob Major says he fled Torit, capital of the newly created Imatong state, when he had nothing to eat. The ex-soldier says he could no longer provide for his 7 children and 3 wives. He says the £800 he was earning per month wasn't enough anymore. Remembering past Christmases when things were good, Majur says he would often invite friends and relatives to celebrate at his home by listening to their favorite music while drinking the local beer.
You'll just make some local things that will let your people should be happy, slapping a cow. When you have a cow or you have a goat or a chicken, then you will do is to let your people to be happy because it is happy days.
Because of the economic crisis, Majuru says he has no money to buy new clothes or a good meal for his family this Christmas.
The condition which brought me in Southern Sudan is still facing me here. Because I have no money in my pocket, do what? Because I just make it like somebody is still in the bush.
Commodity prices have skyrocketed, and the local currency has continued to fall against the dollar since the fighting broke out more than 3 years ago. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinj in Kampala, Uganda.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. South Sudanese refugees streaming into Ugandan settlement camps get tested for HIV. We'll have more on that story when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is there something you used to do as a child that you wished you still had time for?
Climbing trees. I enjoy going climbing mountains because I'm a villager. I come from the village, and I can still vividly remember how we go on climbing mountains, removing some fruits, getting herbs for our parents. I would still love to do that.
When I was a child, I loved reading books. And up till now, I read books. So I'm still doing things that I do when I was young. No, the time is not enough now because there is school, there is work.
When we used to do for holidays, we used to visit one another. But for now, we don't have a holiday as for now I'm working. So I wish if I were a child, when I grow school, I could be going and visiting my friend.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Health officials at the Bidibidi refugee settlement in Uganda's Yumbe district say despite being under-resourced, they are providing care to refugees living with HIV. Officials say they have registered hundreds of South Sudanese refugees who are HIV positive are being treated as part of an effort to curb the spread of the disease in the camp. Simon Peter Apiku has more for VOA from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
The fight against HIV in the Bidibidi camp includes outreach programs aimed at persuading refugees to know their status and seek treatment, as well as reduce the rate of new infections, especially from mother to child. Doreen Akidi heads a team of HIV/AIDS counselors at the Bidibidi Health Center. Akidi says the number of refugees on the health center's HIV program has been growing steadily since the camp was established in August.
Currently, we have enrolled both the nationals and the non-nationals. Those are the refugees here. We have a total of around 289 clients in care. And the refugees take a bigger percentage because of these clients we have. Only around 40% of them, 40 in number, are nationals.
Akidi says the center has a HIV clinic that uses a three-pronged approach of counseling, psychological support, and medical treatment, all in an effort to achieve the UN's strategy of significantly reducing the spread of the disease by 2020.
We are going to start implementing the UN strategy of ensuring that at least 90% of the people who are living with HIV in the community know their serostatus, and ensure that of the 90% that have known their status, at least 90% of them also are enrolled in care and we retain them.
One way to do this, says Akidi, is by stepping up awareness campaigns so that refugees get tested for HIV. Those found to be carrying the virus are immediately placed under care and treatment. The clinic relies on individuals coming in voluntarily for HIV counseling and testing to determine the extent of the problem within the refugee community. Akidi says many refugees are reluctant to get tested because of the widespread stigma and discrimination attached to HIV in South Sudanese communities.
And that is why we want to scale up and reach the communities, village by village. When we do that, it will help us to reduce the issues of stigma and discrimination, and we sensitize the community on what is supposed to be done.
The campaign appears to be bearing some fruit. 60-year-old Betty Ayet a South Sudanese refugee from Owen Kibul in the former Eastern Equatorial State, was among the first to respond to calls for refugees to come for HIV counseling and testing. Speaking in her native Acholi language, the mother of seven says she's glad she did.
I was tested for HIV only after I came to Uganda and visited the Bidibidi Health Center, and the results were positive. We did not have any health facility in our village to carry out the test.
South Sudanese refugee Mary Tabo hails from Morobo in the former Central Equatorial State. She says people should not be ashamed to find out if they have the disease. Speaking in Kiswahili language, the 30-year-old mother of three says she knew her status long before coming to Uganda.
I have tuberculosis. I am HIV positive and I have got wounds all over my body.
Ayet says her condition has improved a bit since she started taking her medicine.
When I first arrived here in Uganda, I could barely walk, but now I'm even gaining some weight.
Tabu says she also sees benefits in being open and honest about her condition.
I was bedridden and unable to stand up without being supported. If I had to go to the hospital, someone would carry me on a bicycle.
But Ayet admits she has not told her children about her HIV status, but says that does not mean she's living in the dark.
My advice to the people out there is that they should get tested and know their status.
Hakidi says she is inspired by the courage and honesty of women like Ayet and Tabu. She says it is that kind of attitude that will lead to the success of HIV prevention and treatment programs.
We had a 15-day program where we had a film van where we would go and sensitize the community. We reached a few of the villages. Two, we are also testing the people. And by testing, people will embrace prevention. And even those who are tested HIV positive, when they start care, at least we see that we are reducing the rate of transmission.
Health officials at the Bidibidi settlement fear that unless more people come forward to be tested and placed on care, the disease could spread rapidly among the refugee population. For VOA News, I'm Simon Peter Piku in Kampala.
An Ebola vaccine was 100% effective in a major study in Guinea. Health officials say they will be better prepared for the next outbreak. VOA Steve Barragona has more.
As Ebola began tearing through Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia in 2014, health workers could do nothing but isolate victims to try to stop the epidemic. So final results from the first major study of an Ebola vaccine mark a turning point. The World Health Organization led the study of more than 11,000 people divided into two groups, says Ebola Research Chief Marie-Paul Kenny, reached by Skype.
We had zero case of Ebola in the group that was vaccinated immediately versus 23 cases in the ones who were not vaccinated. So it's zero as compared to 23, and you can say that this vaccine must be pretty efficacious.
A handful of vaccines are in various stages of testing. But Kenny's group got final results first by using a unique strategy. The epidemic was waning by the time vaccines were ready for testing. The shrinking number of cases made it hard to test their preventive powers. So her study focused on people around those already sick with Ebola.
And it identified from this Ebola case all the contacts, the one who have been in contact with the diseased person, as well as the contacts of these contacts.
Vaccinating this ring of contacts is how smallpox was eradicated. Kenny says it's the first time it's been used to prove a vaccine works. The results, appearing in the medical journal The Lancet, follow promising initial data published in July 2015. The vaccine already has helped stop an Ebola flare-up in Guinea earlier this year. The manufacturer, Merck, is applying for approval from regulators.
There's a good level of preparation already now, and we hope that that this will come to another degree of preparation when the vaccine is registered.
The health nonprofit Gavi has agreed to buy 300,000 doses once approved, but Kenny cautions there's another strain of Ebola that this vaccine is not designed to prevent, and health officials need to be ready to fight the inevitable next outbreak. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
Caritas Torit, a large charitable organization in Imatong State, is distributing food to hundreds of vulnerable families who cannot afford to put food on the table this Christmas season. As Demo Silva Aurelo reports for VOA from Torit, the beneficiaries say the food has given them hope for having a blessed Christmas with their families.
Elizabeth Ojara, a mother of five, received food commodities worth 2,500 South Sudanese pounds from Caritas. Speaking in Arabic, Ojara says with the food donations, she will be able to celebrate Christmas this year with her children.
I'm so happy because these items come at a right time of Christmas, and now it's going to help me and my children. I thank this organization.
Margaret Iromo, who has nine children, received 5 kilograms of beans, 10 kilograms of maize flour, cooking oil, salt and soap for her Christmas. Speaking in her native Orugo language, Iromo says although she is grateful for the food donations, they will not be enough to sustain her large family.
I think this will not be enough for my family because I will prepare a meal of only one day and the next day it will be finished. I suppose to get one sack so that it can push me and my children towards the end of the festive season. Fire consumed my farm. It would have helped me.
Victor Ogwokwino is a wounded hero. Speaking in Arabic, Ogwok says it is better to have a little food than no food at all.
I'm happy and I will pray to God. They have helped me. I thank the government. It has helped me and the help will push me ahead.
Joseph Lagu is a Caritas Torit emergency response officer. He says within this festive season, his office plans to distribute food to about 600 households in Torit and Equator, two areas affected by the surge in fighting in July.
We have given Torit County 350 households, and that means 250 will go to Equators. So in total, we are targeting 600 households. The activities is targeting this vulnerable group, which involves elderly people who are 65 years above. We are also targeting households headed by disabled people. We also targeting households headed by women. We assume women are overwhelmed, women who are their household head. They do not have men to go around and also help them. So at the same time, we also targeting children headed unaccompanied children.
Lagu says residents will be given vouchers so they can pick up food at designated shops.
There are around six items, say flour, we have beans, we have laundry soap, we have cooking oil, we have sugar. So the voucher has got a value of 2,500 per household attached to it. If you are given a voucher, that voucher has got 2,500, which you'll go to the trader and redeem it from the trader. So the trader's responsibility is to give you materials and in an equivalent of that value.
John Odongi is acting chairperson of the South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Eastern Equatoria. Odongi says even though the donations will not feed families for more than a few days or a week, they will encourage residents to stay in South Sudan during the country's acute economic crisis.
It is true that the 15 kgs will not be able to sustain the family household for a number of 1 month or even 15 days, but due to the limitation of the resources, that is why we are forced to give them the little we have. But we hope that we are still looking forward for more organizations to come in also to deliver support to the people of Eastern Equatoria in general.
Odongi points out that many families in Imatong State cannot afford the high prices of goods in the market because of the skyrocketing inflation rate in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Demo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
Here's is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Ayen. The UN Security Council in New York today defeated a U.S.-sponsored resolution that would have imposed an arms embargo on the South Sudan government and rebels, as well as placed sanctions on three key figures involved in the three-year-long conflict. Seven council members voted in favor of the resolution, while eight abstained. To be adopted, a UN resolution needs nine yes votes and no veto by a permanent member. U.S. Ambassador Samantha Power told the council after the vote that the resolution would not have been a panacea, but that the arms embargo would have had some significant effects in stemming the flow of weapons. Both Power and UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon have repeatedly urged the Council to approve an arms embargo, warning that if no action is taken, South Sudan will be on a trajectory towards mass atrocities. South Sudan's representative to the UN, Ambassador Joseph Muam Malak, says the UN Security Council resolution would have only weakened his government. Presidential spokesman Wek Atteni agrees, saying he's happy that countries like China and Russia refused to vote for imposing targeted sanctions and an arms embargo because such a vote was unnecessary, in his words. He called it a ploy to diminish the political responsibility of the government in protecting the Republic of South Sudan's territorial integrity. He also said armed groups will continue to fight. And Atteni says whatever has happened in the past, South Sudan remains a strong country and is capable of restoring peace on its own. And finally, as people around the world prepare to celebrate Christmas on Sunday, South Sudanese refugees in Uganda say they have nothing to celebrate. They say this year's Christmas will pass like any other ordinary day because they do not have the means to afford a proper celebration. 38-year-old South Sudanese refugee and single mother Mary Agiku says four of her five children have been adopted by relatives because she was unable to provide for them herself. She says she left Nimele after armed men attacked and killed people in her village earlier this year. She says she doesn't have money to enjoy this Christmas while living in a settlement camp in northern Uganda. Agiku says before she would have bought some items from the town and sell them for a profit in the village and use the earnings to buy her children gifts for Christmas, but says she cannot do that anymore. More than a million South Sudanese are seeking refuge in neighboring countries, mainly Uganda, Kenya, Ethiopia, and Sudan, since South Sudan's civil war broke out in late 2013. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Carol. And that's our show for this Friday. We leave you with the song Happy Christmas by the South Sudanese Catholic Choir.
Happy Christmas, happy Christmas to everybody. Jesus Christ is born in Bethlehem. He is the Son of the Most High. Let us sing with the angels of God. Glory, glory, glory to God in the highest, and peace to his people on earth. Our Lord is born in Bethlehem. He is the Son of the Most High. Our Savior is born in Bethlehem. He is the Son of the Most High. Our life is born in Bethlehem. He is the Son of the Most High.
Happy Christmas to everyone.
We've been listening to the South Sudanese Catholic Choir with the song Happy Christmas. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington, wishing you a Merry Christmas. And we'll see you back here on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.